From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
New hospitalizations are flat. That is not a good sign. That's not what's happened in previous dips from surges. We went down for a while here, but now we've leveled out at a level that is much higher than the summer. And so the question is that just a temporary situation? Are we going to start heading downward in those numbers?
If we want safety, it must be grounded in data and evidence. If we want safety, we must move from the failed old guard status quo for a new, clear understanding of what Pope Francis calls the collective Samaritan.
When the governor first lands in London, his pitch will not only be green environmentally, but green financially. The first goal, bring more electric vehicle manufacturers to Illinois.
We want them to come to Illinois. We want all of them to gather in similar places.
Then in Glasgow, Scotland, the International Climate Summit, Pritzker wants the world to know that Illinois intends to eliminate all coal and natural gas power plants within 3 decades.
Governor J.B. Pritzker, he's on an overseas trip. We'll be discussing what he's hoping to accomplish there. Meanwhile, back home, the issue of gun violence getting more attention, and we heard from the Senator Robert Peters there. We'll also talk COVID updates here on State Week, so stay with us for that. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Emeritus Professor and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us today, Rachel Hinton. She covers government and politics for the Chicago Sun-Times. Rachel, thanks for being with us once again.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on.
Well, Hannah, Governor J.B. Pritzker, as I mentioned, he's overseas and making a few different stops, including the big climate conference. And climate change is really the point of this trip. What's he trying to do with going overseas?
Right. So the first 2 days of his trip have been spent in London trying to recruit green energy businesses, specifically electric vehicle manufacturers and other companies that are related to electric vehicle production and, you know, batteries and charging stations, all the related businesses. And this is related to, of course, the big energy and climate change bill that lawmakers passed. Because, you know, in that bill, we had a goal of getting 1 million new electric vehicles on the road and Illinois roads in the next decade. You know, the governor, Democrats and Republicans, too, let's be clear, Manufacturers Association, they have a shared goal of making Illinois a hub for electric vehicle manufacturing to add to what Rivian in Bloomington Normal and Lion Electric up in Joliet in EV Box, which is their North American headquarters, is up in the northern suburbs, to add to what all of those companies are already doing.
Yeah, I think, Rachel, as was mentioned, that this is a new and growing industry. So, you know, why not Illinois? Illinois could do this as well as many other places. In fact, it's already starting up here in some locations. But then again, many other states are vying for these types of investments. So just because Illinois passes this law and the governor goes overseas, nothing wrong with that, but it's not a slam dunk for him.
I'd say that that's right, but I think that Pritzker is really mobilizing, you know, himself and also members of the legislature who've worked on these bills, you know, legislative leaders, to really try to gather support and interest in bringing electric vehicle manufacturing businesses and companies here to Illinois. Whether or not, you know, that happens, whether or not we see, you know, a huge influx of these companies coming in and, you know, the jobs and incentives that they could bring, obviously remains to be seen. But I think that this is really part of Pritzker's big climate effort to bring those companies here.
Yeah. And Charlie, this was more common, it seemed to me, in the past. Of course, COVID put a halt to a lot of this type of international travel, but almost every governor I can think of, you know, made at least some trip out of the country, certainly well out of the state, to try to find investments, try to, you know, do something like a trade mission. And we used to have trade offices overseas. I don't know how many of those actually are still open, but has this been an effective strategy for governors when we look back?
I'm not sure how you can quantify it. Yeah, we've gotten some manufacturing to locate here. We've got some headquarters locate here, like Boeing. but it's a way for governors to raise their profile in the state and on the national stage. Jim Thompson went all around the world in various trade missions. And as you said, we had trade offices on every continent at one point. But the one that I always got a chuckle out of was George Ryan announced he was going on a trade mission to Cuba. And somebody said to him, well, Governor, actually, we don't do trade with Cuba because they're a communist. They're a communist dictatorship, you know, Fidel Castro and all that. And so George says, okay, it'll be a humanitarian mission. And he went. And obviously, we did not get a Cuban companies locating in Illinois. But I did not go on that trip. But some of the reporters who did said it was just really eye-opening, very fascinating. But it's a legitimate thing. You want to get the industry. And as was mentioned, we're in the forefront of the Midwest states in terms of climate change, green energy. And we've got tax incentives that are available to these industries, where the big one is if you locate here and you create jobs, you'll withhold state income tax from your employees' paychecks. But you'll get to keep it. You don't have to send it to the state. The employee will get credit for having paid the income tax, but you get to keep it, which I think is a big, enticement to get people to locate here. Plus, if you look at it, we're at the transportation crossroads. It's been said many times of the whole country. All the rail lines run through here, major interstates, the Lake Michigan, and that gives us access to the Atlantic Ocean. We have the Illinois River, Mississippi gives us access to southern oceans. So we've got a lot of things that make us very attractive. And so I think that's what the governor is going to be talking up with these companies to try and get some more manufacturing located here in Illinois along the I-55 corridor from Bloomington up to Joliet.
Yeah, Hannah, Charlie mentioned the income tax incentive there. That could be something that a lot of businesses will take a close look at, but also there's some union protections in this legislation. Could that hamper the governor's efforts here?
Yeah, the legislation passed last week with pretty unanimous, I guess Charlie doesn't like when we say unanimous when it's not, 100% of lawmakers voting, but very bipartisan support for these tax incentives to attract these electric vehicle manufacturers and other related companies. It has obviously the incentives, but of course it is Illinois. It's a state that where organized labor is very influential. And so they got into, the bill, some business groups, opposed the legislation. The Illinois Chamber of Commerce, by the way, they're a much more hardline purity test kind of organization, whereas the Illinois Manufacturers Association is much more willing to make a deal. But, the chamber opposed it because it includes a labor neutrality position, which basically means the recipients of the tax credits, can't oppose unionization from their employees. Obviously, the states that have, right to work, they're going to be competing for these electric vehicles, too. But, we've seen a trend in the last 15, 10 years that corporations want to, if not, if it's not their feeling in their heart, they want to at least appear to have value, have shared values with what they're making and, to attract more customers. So maybe they'll choose Illinois based on that, based on the climate goals and, maybe the more progressive ideals. But when it comes to the end of the day, of course, labor costs in Illinois are going to be a lot higher than other states. So we'll see how well this tax incentive package ends up working.
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce didn't like it. But on the other hand, the Illinois Manufacturers Association, the President Mark Densler, said, yeah, this is not perfect, but it makes Illinois competitive with our neighboring states and our competitors across the country. Talking about the tax package, the chamber maybe doesn't like it. Todd Meisch, the head of the Chamber of Commerce, complained about he doesn't like this allowing unions to organize. But Densler, who represents, I would argue, the more directly the folks who would be building these plants and producing electric vehicles, components, charging stations, and all the rest of the network, he says that they can live with it. So we'll have to see.
And it takes a long time for these types of trade missions to pay off, if they ever do. It may be a few years down the road before we see the type of investment that the governor is hoping to see from this. But Rachel, what else is being accomplished here politically for Governor J.B. Pritzker?
You mean on this foreign trip?
On this trip.
I think that it raises his profile. Doing this trip, he gets to bring his policy initiatives, his policy wins, his accomplishments overseas, begins shoring up more support, begins making new allies or strengthening other allyships. I think he also raises his profile at home in some ways, or has the potential to do that. He, especially in the beginning of the pandemic, was on talk shows and was, you know, really pushing, you know, what Illinois is doing to combat, you know, this deadly virus. And so I think that we're seeing Pritzker kind of play chess, not checkers here, in terms of potentially angling for either a higher office or a larger profile nationally. You know, his COVID successes combined with these energy and climate successes and also going overseas for that, I think could help him win more votes or garner more votes and more support here at home, while also getting his name out there to more people.
Yeah, Hannah, before we move on, but just your thoughts on that as well, politically. This is a no-brainer for the governor, I would guess, if he wants to be that, what we were considering at one point, that go-to guy that these cable news shows, the national shows, always turn to from the progressive stance.
Yeah, I mean, when you there's not a lot of Democratic governors who have been able to capture that national audience. Of course, we had Governor Andrew Cuomo, who got, you know, I couldn't exactly say what kinds of the combination of media wins and, you know, his legacy in New York got him very, very famous at the beginning of the pandemic outside of his home state. But of course, he has had quite a fall from grace with dual scandals of inappropriate touching and other things like that, and also a nursing home death COVID scandal. And so, you know, the governor, if he wanted to raise his profile to be that go-to guy and be always on cable news, he could definitely do that. But that's a balancing act too, because, you know, you don't want to be accused of running things from national TV. You don't want to be accused of, you know, weighing that more heavily than your actual duties as governor, you know, especially as because, you know, people have talked about his possible aspirations for a White House run, whether it's in 2024 or maybe 28. But, you know, he wants to step carefully. But I think in general, he could probably parlay this into something positive for him politically.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Rachel Hinton of the Chicago Sun-Times. And we'll get into COVID across the state, what the numbers look like, things like that. But Rachel, let me start with Chicago quickly, because we have seen, and from my standpoint in Springfield, been reading a lot about Mayor Lori Lightfoot and her battles with the police union, for example, over vaccine mandates. Where do things stand there now?
I believe the latest on that is a Cook County judge on Monday told city attorneys and the Chicago Police Department's labor unions to go back to the bargaining table to try to figure out this COVID-19 vaccine mandate. On Monday, a judge also left intact the requirement, the city's requirement, that CPD officers report their vaccine status, but said, told the city that, you know, they can't require CPD officers to be vaccinated by December 31st, which was their initial deadline. So now some members of the FOP and other unions counted that as a victory, but they still have to report their vaccination status. And I believe that that's still one of the lowest vaccine reporting sorry, one of the lowest vaccine reporting rates in the city. I think it's 73% responded, and 80% of them said that they were vaccinated. This continues to be kind of a point of contention for the mayor. I think more likely than not, they'll both have to move toward the middle. It's not exactly clear what that middle will be. That's what they have to figure out. But the mayor doesn't seem, I guess, too pleased with this. Obviously, to the media and front-facing, she tries to make it seem like a win. But I don't know that she can count this as a win yet.
And Hannah, when it comes to COVID across Illinois, and the governor's weighed in on that, we heard him at the start of the show, there were some good news out there. Kids are now going to be able to start getting the vaccine, younger kids, but the numbers aren't necessarily trending the way the governor wants to see them.
No, you know, we had seen a pretty good decline after the peak of, you know, the Delta variant fueled wave in July, August, in September. But unfortunately now, the number of new people going into the hospital for COVID or COVID-like illness, it's flattened out. And that's kind of the most reliable metric we have, because other things have fluctuated, but that's kind of something that's always been the same. You can obviously measure someone going into the hospital, they have COVID. So the governor a couple of weeks ago, I think we talked about on the show, he said kind of off the cuff, he would hope to have mask mandates lifted by the holidays. I think it might be something he comes to regret saying, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there, and it's not just these so-called anti-maskers or whatever. It's, you know, people are sick of, you know, even though, yeah, it's just a piece of cloth, whatever. But there's a lot of people who want to go back to, you know, more sense of normalcy, you know, a nice thing that we had for a while there in June and early July. But alas, that is not what is happening. And of course, in the meantime, we don't know what might happen on the legal front. You know, the governor's vaccine mandates, mask mandates, all sorts of stuff. It's still being challenged in courts, and these things have to play out on multiple levels before we get to any final decisions. But, you know, still definitely have a few more months of chaos that are brought on by dueling decisions and confusion over them. And all the while, the governor is still not given any metrics for getting rid of mask mandates. You know, it's something that he refused to do when he put the mask mandates back on in, you know, early August for schools and late August for everywhere else. And we don't know, and we don't really have any sort of numbers to be looking for a goal.
Yeah, Charlie, did he make a misstep there to kind of give people that hope that, hey, we might get rid of the mask mandate? When I heard it, I even thought to myself, boy, it doesn't seem like that makes sense to do that with the holidays, people getting close together. If you're going to do it, at least wait till that period's over. But, you know, he made the comment. Was that a misstep on his part?
I don't think so. I think it was a sort of an incentive for people, because he didn't say, oh, yes, we're going to get rid of it. It was very much conditioned upon the fact that the numbers keep going down. And the numbers, as was said earlier, the hospitalization numbers have kind of flattened out. And so you could argue that had more people gotten vaccinated, had people been more diligent in following the guidelines from the time that he said it, maybe we'd be in a different place today. But one of the things that I saw that the news just broke, and which I found very encouraging, Pfizer has a new drug out, and they put it through tests of roughly 800 people who had this drug, and then another placebo group. And there were people who were not vaccinated who had symptoms of COVID. Everybody, well, 90% of the people who had the symptoms did not have to be hospitalized. None of them died. In the placebo group, 7 people died. And so they say this is 90% effective in preventing hospitalization. And so I'm thinking, once this gets vetted through all the different regulatory agencies and approved for general use, I think that'll be a game changer. It'll be, oh man, I'm starting to show these symptoms. I had a test and I'm positive. Well, here, pop these pills for 5 days and forget about it.
Mm-hmm. It also would make it easier to administer the drug if it's in a pill form, but let me move on.
Oh, sure. You're not an IV or not an injection. You can do it at home.
Sure. Let me move on here in the time we got left. Rachel, give us an update. I mentioned gun violence getting some attention this week. The governor came out earlier and declared a public health emergency. That's something that's been sort of on the table for a while. What does that accomplish?
Pritzker on Monday declared gun violence a public health crisis. He also pledged to put $250 million over the course of 3 years to reducing shootings. A lot of people were on hand for that announcement. Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, various state legislators. The goal here really seems to be trying to reduce the increase in shootings we've seen, not just in Chicago, but around the state. And that, you know, fits into a national increase in violence that we're seeing both, I think, in, you know, other major metropolitan cities and states like New York and Los Angeles. The mayor, you know, after this press conference, after this announcement, said, you know, she's been trying to treat gun violence as a public health crisis since before she was even in office. She welcomes the money. She welcomes the, you know, state support for this. But, you know, it remains to be seen where this money will go and how effective it'll be, along with the $250 million. The Reimagine Public Safety Act, which is one piece of what Pritzker talked about on Monday, also creates the state's first Office of Firearm Violence Prevention. I believe that office will begin working with two separate state agencies, as well as other relevant agencies who deal with gun violence or who address it, to begin trying to figure out ways to address systemic issues that lead to that gun violence. But again, like, it remains to be seen how effective this will be. You know, recently the mayor's budget for 2022 includes funds to address gun violence and for mental health services and violence interrupters. There's been a lot of talk around reducing gun violence and some action too, but it just doesn't seem to be helping. It doesn't seem to be curbing the numbers as much as public officials would like. So we'll see. We'll have to see how effective this is or how much it helps. But from people I spoke to, people seem to be pretty skeptical.
Okay. And it wouldn't be a State Week broadcast without us taking at least a moment to bring up REMAP. It has come up quite a bit this year, of course. And now a congressional district map has been approved in the legislature, the governor likely to sign it. But there are still some legal wrangling that's going on over that. And Hannah, about a minute left. Can you give us a quick update on where things stand?
Sure. While we've been taping this, I've been, and Rachel has too, recording a telephonic status hearing about the legislative maps federal court challenge. Obviously, we've been recording. I don't know what was ultimately decided, but, you know, I think the parameters still stay the same. We're probably going to see some sort of trial in early December, some more court filings and proceedings in the next month before then. But, this all has to be wrapped up before mid-January when folks, would-be candidates have to start passing petitions to get on the primary ballot.
All right. Well, we'll continue to watch that. And let's go now to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, Illinois is noted as being a farm state, right? Well, among other things, but we have a big agriculture sector. What do you think is the third most valuable crop grown in Illinois, coming after corn and soybeans? Would you believe marijuana? There was a report put out by a group called Leafly, which is a entity that examines data about marijuana production. And it said that in Illinois, the value of Illinois cannabis in FY21, which was the fiscal year that ended on June 30th, was roughly $322 million. Now, corn was worth $9.3 billion, soybeans $7 billion. So the cannabis wasn't up there with those two. But that's interesting. And one of the things on this report that I found surprising is that there were a number of states. There's only about a dozen states that have legalized cannabis. In Colorado, marijuana is the number one cash crop worth more than $1 billion. But on the other hand, Colorado also has more than 1,000 legal cultivation licenses, whereas we only have 54 or had 54 at the time of this report.
And Rachel?
Late last month, the state's Supreme Court ruled that a Cook County tax, two Cook County taxes, one on firearms and one on ammunition, were unconstitutional. And yesterday, the Cook County Board voted overwhelmingly, there were two holdouts, the two Republicans on the board, to keep the tax and put the money toward programs and other services that address gun violence, hoping to curb it, which is kind of ironic or funny, quote unquote, not actually funny. A judge who voted to overturn the tax issued another opinion saying, with the way the majority's opinion is written, this leaves the door open for a county to implement a tax and say, oh, we're just doing this because gun violence is bad. We're going to put all the money we get from this tax toward preventing gun violence. And that's basically what the county is doing. And watching this or following this to see if there is another court challenge, because it's still a tax on someone's Second Amendment right, but now it goes toward gun violence prevention efforts.
Okay. And Hannah?
Well, there's some very interesting power struggle going on at the Illinois Tollway. The chair and CEO of the board and the executive director appear to be at loggerheads. And it's gotten so bad that the executive director has asked the board to step in and kind of mediate after the chair reorganized the tollway and consolidated power under him, even though he's only a part-time employee. So very interesting agency. It's a quasi-governmental agency and obviously had its share of scandal over the decades. Then also super quickly, the governor was not alone in his UK trip. Senate President Don Harmon and House Speaker Chris Welch went with him. And they posed in front of a statue of Abraham Lincoln in the center of London, which means they went all the way to Illinois, to London, just to get a picture of our boy, Abe Lincoln.
You can take the guys out of Illinois, but you can't take the Illinois out of the guys.
And then the United Kingdom consulate in Chicago sent out a tweet saying that Abraham Lincoln was the first American to have his statue placed in this parliamentary park and the first non-Briton.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Rachel Hinton with the Chicago Sun-Times. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes. And join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.